Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey, Brad.
What's up, Adam?
Oh, dude, you know, just feeling real chill.
You look good, you feel good.
Oh, and when you look good and you feel good, you pod good.
Darn right. And what's the best way that we can pod good?
Put Koi CBD in your body.
It's so great. I'm so glad that these guys jumped on as the sponsors. CBD oil is the hottest thing in health right now. You watch the news. Every day there's a new study about how good this stuff is.
Oh, yeah.
And the benefits of it.
We're one press conference away from Trump being like, this is why my cheeseburgers taste so good. They've got Koi CBD oil in them. CBD, if you don't know what it is, it's not weed. That's a big misconception. It's an oil derived from an industrial hemp plant that has no psychoactive effects. So you get the medical benefits from the hemp plant without getting the high, man. It's a great natural alternative to over-the-counter and pharmaceutical drugs. Now, there's a lot of uses for CBD oil.
Absolutely.
Creams, tinctures, vapes, gummies, which Koi all provides. I fuck with the gummies every morning because it starts my day off with a very relaxed, chill, meditative. I just feel dialed in. There's got to be something in these gummies that also, you know, gives your brain an extra level of coherentness. Is that the word?
Well, because you probably
it makes you make up words.
You took a gummy before you said that. That's for sure. And I do the same thing, but I have the oils. I just take the CBD oil. I put it in my tea, and then I'm good to go for
You're
the rest
a tea guy
of the day.
Now. Is that from being married?
I mean, I don't know what it is.
Tea is great, though.
I'm a tea guy because it makes me feel good. And CBD oil, Koi CBD oil, makes me feel even better. They got all sorts of flavors. They got
the flavors?
They got peppermint. They got lemon lime. They got blue raspberry. They got all these different things.
They are the fruity pebbles of CBD oil. People use it, too, for pain, anxiety, inflammation. My mom uses the Koi topical creams for arthritis. And she straight up told me, she's like, I don't hurt like I hurt before.
That's a great slogan.
And I'm like, that is so awesome. Honest and real, and that's coming from a Jewish mom. Yeah. And as you said, they don't lie.
This stuff works so well. I'm scared to rub the lotion on me because I think it might cure my dwarfism. And then what the fuck am I going to joke about?
Well, Koi CBD, all these products are manufactured in the USA with 100% natural CBD oil. It's the best tasting product on the market, as we've attested to the flavors. We've tried a bunch. People have come to us all the time trying to be like, yo, can we sponsor? We haven't found the one we've liked until now. And they're America's number one trusted CBD brand. All the products are THC free. And it's a family-owned and operated company. And if you want to fuck with Koi, which you should because we do, and we can't talk about how much we love their products enough, the gummies, the tinctures, the creams, the tinctures, the drops. Dude, I put a couple drops in before I go to bed. And it also makes it easier to drink coffee because coffee gives me a little bit of anxiety.
Yep.
And now it calms me down. So I love that. If you want it, go to KoiCBD.com right now. Put in promo code AboutLastNight, all one word, all caps, for 20% off any retail order from the website. KoiCBD.com, promo code about last night for 20% off the order. Start feeling good, start living good, start looking good, start dwarfing good.
Start dwarfing good.
The official dwarf sponsor.
Koi is the official CBD sponsor of dwarves. Can I say that? I'm pretty sure.
You've got proof.
I'm a dwarf. I'll bring it up at the next meeting.
And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. This weekend, I will be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on Thursday at the Rivers Casino with Dane Cook. That's Thursday, the 17th of October, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Rivers Casino. And then Friday, Seminole Hard Rock Hotel in Northfield, Ohio. On Friday, the 18th of October, Northfield, Ohio, Seminole Hard Rock Hotel. And then Saturday, holy shit, Mohegan Sun Arena in Uncasville, Connecticut. On Saturday, the 19th of October, Mohegan Sun Arena. All those dates with Dane Cook, tickets at danecook.com. Brad Williams this weekend is in New Jersey at the Stress Factory on Friday and Saturday. Go see Brad in New Jersey, New Brunswick, at the Stress Factory. Tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Today's a bonus episode, baby. I've been on tour with him. I've been flying on his fucking private jet, which is crazy. And we did a podcast from the skies. First one ever that I've done. Not in the history of podcasts, but from a plane. And I tell you this, flying private makes you never want to fly commercial again because you don't have to deal with all the bullshit and all the people and all the where am I going to get my snacks from because they're on the plane already. It rules, man. Dane rules. These shows have been killer. And we got kind of deep on this one. We talk a lot of comedy and got to the core of what makes Dane Dane and where he got his kind of his bravery and fearlessness and thirst and passion for the arts and for performing. Really pretty cool. He told me off mic a handful of stories about this and finally got to put it on record so you guys could hear. We talked about his latest appearance on Jimmy Fallon, touring, what these shows have been like, what the new fans have been like, and you know, we just riff a lot too. It's a fun, funny episode. We did it from the skies on a private jet, so it doesn't get cooler than this. So enjoy this episode, a bonus episode with the great Dane Cook on the Tell It Like It Is tour, which is currently still in progress. Like I said, this weekend, next weekend, the weekend after, all the way leading up to a big show here in L.A. at the Dolby Theater, which I'll be doing with him on November 16th on Saturday. So follow Dane at DaneCook.com for all the tour dates. Dane Cook on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram and Twitter. Brad's at Funny Brad and Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. At Ailen Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for all your ALN merch and past and present eps. Email us at AboutLastNightPod@gmail.com. I'm going to be reading a handful more fan letters on Monday when the Sue Bird episode drops, which I can't wait for, and going to be giving out some more free merch. So email us again at AboutLastNightPod@gmail.com. Your favorite eps, how you got into the pod, where you listen to it, why you love it. And we might pick your email to win some free merch. Rate us and comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. Give it a 5-star rating. Comment on the iTunes page. And subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, wherever you get your audio fix. Go get it. Get the podcast. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Go back. Listen to the Sandra Bullock eps, the Dana Carvey eps, the Melissa McCarthy, the Neil Patrick Harris, Blake Griffin, Gary Payton, Adam Devine, Dane Cook, who's done it twice already, 3 times actually. This makes number 4, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. So now that we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast, a bonus episode with the one and only Dane Cook.
What you can do and what is, I think, expected of any person in performance is hone your craft, extend those abilities,
yep,
and teach yourself some new tricks, because when things do finally start to swirl around back in your favor, now you're not coming at people with like, hey, remember that thing that I did before? Here's some more of it.
Yeah.
The same way, with a little less energy and a little less enthusiasm because I'm a little bored doing it. No, you got to be constantly reinventing. I think that you're like having a home. It's constant upkeep. The minute you sit back and you just start letting things kind of settle in, cracks, you know, start to show. So I'm a person that believes in being resilient. And I knew coming into this part of my life that the only way I was going to have a round, whatever we want to call it, a round 6, for example, was to evolve and to grow in my comedy. So it was intentional to take a little more time back, to not try to put product out just for to make ready. A few bucks before it's ready.
Because that's easy, because you could have. You could have done a big tour every year and just go out with, right?
Yeah, but when you do that, there's a very, very small window of opportunity to be somebody who is in that rare air where you're just a constant fixture like the holidays in people's life. So random. There's a Will Smith or a Dave Chappelle or comedy, like an Eddie Murphy. There's a few people that are like part of an orbit or a cycle. The rest of us, most of us, don't have that. You got to re-earn your spot. You got to reclaim your position. And the only way you're going to do that is by entering new territory and bringing something new to the table in performance.
Did you get or do you get DMs throughout this break of people being like, and did that play a factor in you wanting to then go, all right, it's time for the tour? You seem very calculated when you're doing spots in LA about like building the material. And I've, you know, now I've seen, I feel like I've seen, there's, you know, all, every show is different. You're mixing and matching. You've probably got hours of material to lay down for this next special that you've been, you know, curating over these last 5 years and more so. Sometimes I've seen you do bits and one or two times and then like at a club and then haven't seen on tour and then see one on tour that I hadn't seen you work out. So how are you deciding each night what to do? And because again, like at this level, I feel like it's, you could, I feel like, you know, again, 5 years ago, I saw hours that I'm like, I would think to myself, I was like, man, why isn't he laying that down?
Right. Well, I finished it because I knew that it was kind of like, all right, put that one in a lockbox and let me start to talk about something else. It's not like it was when you're coming up and maybe like for me 15 years ago where you're just trying to kill and be the best in the room that night.
Yeah.
That goes away after a certain amount of time and you realize it
feels that, good when that goes away, by the way.
Oh, the best. Yeah. Not about just like, hey, I got to be the best so I can get with the hottest girl in the room and make everybody else feel like, I didn't kill as hard as that's, you know.
I'm still dealing with that on certain levels.
Sure.
And a lot of it, too, is also wanting respect from your peers. So if I'm in a room and I know there's comics that I love that are there,
right,
I might abandon more of the newer stuff I was going to do that night because I want to, you know, this is the first time they're seeing me.
Right.
That happened the other night with Ron White. And it's not like I'm ever going to become best friends with him, but I was like, I want him to see me in my element.
Yeah.
But at some point that will.
That's understandable. And I think to some extent, there's always going to be that feeling. I think that's also just being a guy and, you know, the alpha that's in us and, you know.
Well, he talks a lot of shit online, Ron White, about me. So it was also like extra.
He did the same thing to me, too. And then you meet him. He's the nicest guy.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was joking.
Oh, wow. He really did that to me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He talked a lot of smack. And then when I met him,
somebody should toss your tater salad? What did he say?
Whatever he said. He said something, I don't remember. I just remember that it was, like, unnecessary, but I started to learn sometime back, like, these guys have a character, and part of that character is sometimes influenced by who their fans like and stand behind.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, their fans are going to like and stand behind who? Ron White.
Yes.
So I didn't take it so personal, and then I meet him, and he's lovely, and I meet his girlfriend.
Truly, right? Yeah.
Yeah, man. All that stuff is, like, I'm so much more zen about all that.
Yeah,
I've
had
too many people come to me over the years who try to say something or smash me or bash me, and then they come to me and they go, hey, dude, I was dealing with my own shit, or I was jealous, or I was being questioned about why I wasn't doing what you're doing. Adam, honestly, it finally just kind of all that goes away. The only thing that remains is like, hey, I got a fan base that really wants new stuff to laugh at. And that's the only equation that you should be thinking about. Not to say that some nights you're not going to still feel competitive or want those things.
Because there's a healthy element to that, right?
There is, as long as it's not overwhelming you.
Yeah.
You know?
And
as long as you don't leave the stage and go, I did that entirely as a fuck you to somebody sitting at the back of the room. Or, nah. Those, I think you start to learn in business especially, you know, if you're movie making and you're directing, you want to make a great sequel. Well, don't rehash. You want to do something that takes those characters to a place that the audience didn't expect, and they're on an emotional journey. I think a comedy is the same way as great films. I think of it as great music, you know, the Bruce Springsteens. I try to bring something new. I try to put something new into who I am year after year, and I try to bring something else out that maybe I've been afraid to tap into year after year.
When you're trying to write new material and just find, like, I don't know if you have a theme for the.
But can I answer something really quickly?
Please,
that we glossed over?
Yeah.
Because I like being concise about this. I never stopped doing comedy over the last, say, people like to say 5 years.
Yeah.
But I'm going to lay it out really quickly. 4 years ago, Troublemaker hit.
Yeah.
Super proud of it. I directed it. I produced it. I financed it. I sold it.
It's one of my faves.
Okay, one of my favorites, too. Yeah. Just aesthetically and then material-wise and just where I was at in my life.
And there was a break before that one, right? Like a 3 or 4 year.
Well, I was working on Troublemaker leading up to that.
Yeah.
And I was touring. I was on, there was one tour that was before that. I think it was all across Canada.
Yeah.
And then did Troublemaker. And then from Troublemaker, that's when I knew, okay, you know what? I know the corner that I want to turn at this point, but I'm not putting the mic down. I'm just going to stay in LA. I'm going to do these gigs here and there. I'm going to do a couple of tours that are underground. Like the year before this tour, I did a full tour of like 50 dates, and I never advertised. I don't think one of them. I just kind of floated into town, and I would do these, you know, gigs that I'd never done before as a way to just work out without even like having anything expected of me.
Did you feel there was an importance to get out of LA to do that? Why did you, or just...
Yeah, I wanted to take all the stuff out on the road that I'd worked in LA for a couple of years since Troublemaker. So it was poignant, and it was kind of my own master plan to go, I'm going to take 2 years, I'm going to really build this out to 2+ hours of material, then I'm going to do the name tour, and then 2020, I knew I'm going to be hitting 30 years in 2020. So everything now is leading up to what I think is going to be a very dynamic and special year. I don't want to give everything away right now, but of course people are going, okay, is this special on its way? And without answering it very directly, I think there's something even greater than that that's on its way.
Well, I can attest because I've been watching it night in and night out, and it would be a fucking shame if you weren't in some way preparing to lay down what you're doing across the country right now. And to speak on how I thought Troublemaker was one of your best, I feel like, and it should only be that way, to if you're growing and evolving and being consistent with, you know, what the art form requires, like you should be getting better. But also I feel like with this one, I feel like is extra special. The material is all still like vintage you, like what your fans love about you, and you know, just energy and silliness and fun and stuff that makes you think and great, funny act outs, all the stuff that I feel like that got me into you, right? And, but you know, what you've talked about on all these podcasts in the last year, and even just, as you mentioned too, about getting more zen, like, there's all of that that bleeds into who you are on stage doing these shows now, right?
Right. More introspective.
Yeah.
With all those other things. The
you don't lose any funny by getting more introspective.
No. If anything, what you start to learn is, oh, wow, by being even more transparent and vulnerable with the things that have happened to me, both in success and failure, it just makes me have a deeper connection. You know, people write me every night. I read the DMs every single night, as I have for my whole career, whether it was MySpace or whatever the current, you know, hip app or whatever it might be.
Yeah, people need to know that, by the way, that you responded, that you were famous for that, to every MySpace, like, and whatever it was.
And I still do. And I still read them, and it's still important to me, because what happens now is I get people saying, this is the 10th time I've seen you over 20 years, and this is my favorite show.
Man.
Because I deal with anxiety, or I had a weird situation with a stalker, or wow, when you shared that story about failing on stage and crying and telling yourself you suck and you should quit. You know, people love to hear that because it makes them go, oh, we're not as different as I thought. The guy that I saw on TV in Vicious Circle, and he started just like I did. And I did. I'm a welfare kid from outside of Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a kid from food stamps and free lunch tickets and humiliation and a mom that had rheumatoid arthritis and was fucking vacuuming people's houses for $30 to try to give me the life that... to where we could stay in that hometown so I could take theater at Arlington High School and get brave. All that was given to me by a mom who had her own phobias and anxieties. And so now what you're seeing is a complete person that can share all of those things and let you know, or let the audience know, I'm fortunate, but the hard work got me here, and a little bit of lady luck, but it's that thing of rolling up your sleeves and fucking digging in and going, I'm not taking no for an answer. In fact, I'm making no my fuel.
Wow. Make that a fucking t-shirt.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. Sometimes I pull into a gas station and they'll say premium or unleaded. I'll say, do you have any no?
They go, dude, this is not. Yeah. Our currency is in profound thoughts. People do forget that so quickly when they see someone who's has success like you have, which is not a lot in our, if you were to straight up look at it as stand-up comics. Like, you're one of seven that's sold out Madison Square Garden, you know, and we've talked about it on previous pods, but just like everything that you've accomplished and are continuing to do, people look at someone like you and they just go, yeah, of course, like, look at him crush, look how charismatic, look how look he's good in movies, like, of course. But it, but because you also don't parade around the fact of, like, you know, to post a picture of an old you know, movie poster and put hashtag food stamps, like, because, you know what I'm saying,
right?
Which, by the way, there wouldn't be something totally entirely wrong about that, to kind of also let people know, like, hey, just to let you know, I don't forget that this, it's not lost on me that this is all pretty cool, and letting you know that, like, didn't just get this handed to me, definitely had to put in all the work. But
but another thing we're not even talking about, it's not only did it not get handed to me, in life it's more about people trying to take it away from you. And that's the reality. The harsh reality.
Nobody tells you that.
Nobody tells you that most of
it's
life...
It's laid out like, just go for it, and when you get it, enjoy it, baby.
Right. That's probably written by somebody who's whimsical and maybe hasn't fully, you know, enveloped themselves in what it means to go for your dreams and goals. Let's be blunt. Going for those things and making those things come to fruition is a it's an undertaking, because it's more about people trying to take it from you. And I don't mean that, like always, like in a physical sense. I mean that it's a dog eat dog world, man.
Yeah.
And it's definitely that as well in this business. Everybody wants those few spots of, like, who's on the cover of the magazine, who's popular now. So that was for me the most unexpected factor of this whole industry and of going for your goals. There's more obstacles and there's more people that are trying to run and gun and pull something away from you than there is people trying to impart something or truly invest something in you. That's hard to find. When you do find it, you got to work hard to keep that in your circle.
You've told me about your acting teacher, and I don't think we've talked about him on the podcast, but I want you to, like...
Yeah.
Tell me what you've told me before, but now for the audience about, because I think it's, again, you talk about your mom and your pops being like champions and being supportive and your sisters, but like there has to be somebody outside of that that is kind of unbiased that gets to know you early on, like, you know, from a class, you know, a teacher or a friend's parent, somebody that just isn't,
right.
that has to get to know you kind of quickly through, through a contained environment, and this was your drama teacher.
Yes.
And you took drama always knowing you wanted to do it, yeah?
Right. I thought that by taking some drama classes in high school, it would prepare me for stand-up.
Right?
Yeah, because I'd already known I was going to do stand-up.
You told your mom when?
Like eighth or ninth grade, I was like, I'll graduate. I didn't like school. I like journalism, I like creative writing, and I like drama. Everything else, I was not...
How would you get through the classes?
Daydreaming. Having the last name Cook, I was always in the first aisle, ABC, and the first aisle was always next to the window. I probably stared out more windows than at teachers or at chalkboards. But in journalism, creative writing, and drama, I was fascinated because I was surrounded by people that were very confident, and I still didn't have that. So I enjoyed those classes, and I said I would finish high school because I knew that I was getting something from those things. What I didn't know is I was going to meet somebody, Frank Roberts, my mentor and friend, as the years followed, who would teach me more about life right now than even what I needed to know back then.
Did he kind of exude that quality right out of the gate? Like, conversation, did he... I think you even told me something he said to you that he usually was like just real perceptive, and I think that's the job of a drama teacher.
30 years teaching at Arlington High School. Prior to that, he had done theater and off Broadway and had a pretty good career for himself.
Which, by the way, that helps, because there are some times I remember finding out a drama teacher I had in eighth grade that, like, did one production of the Vagina Monologues and was like, now I'm qualified to teach it.
With sock puppets?
It wasn't even, And it was like, it looked more like a penis the puppet did than an actual vagina. So you're like, I can't even buy what this, you know.
Right. A person who probably had more wonder than experience.
Yes. So it does help to know that going in, right?
Frank, you know, had come in to teach drama, and I guess at the core of who he was a guy that wanted to find his own success outside of being a drama teacher, and he lacked certain fundamentals, and the biggest thing he lacked was confidence. And so when I met Frank day one of drama, and we had to do this thing in front of the class where we introduced ourselves and did kind of like a little skit that he prepared. He told us, we're going to go up, take a half hour, think about what you want to do. And I put this whole thing together, a presentation for myself. First time actually being on stage in front of other kids, like 15 kids in the class. And he came up to me, the only kid he came up to after class, and he said, you know, I just want to, you know, chat with you for a minute. Sat down with me and he said, you know, I see a lot of fear in you. But I also saw something happen from the kid sitting here to who stepped on the stage. I saw a light switch, and I saw something that I rarely see. Now, keep in mind, I'm sitting there going, is this guy setting me up to molest me? Am I being groomed to get my shit batted around a little bit by this guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had anybody say,
I see something in you.
This sounded like magic spells. I didn't know anything remotely like this outside of my own family saying, you know, You're good.
Yeah, you're also not privy to a molester's opening monologue. So
I'd never met a molester at that point, so I didn't
you know
if this
tricks
factored in. After him, I met many molesters, and they were much more brash. Usually they just went right for the pants. Yeah. There was not even really any kind of preamble or chit-chat.
No. I don't think molesters are big on preamble these days.
Frank, right away... He recognized something in me that he had told me right in that conversation. He said, I lacked a lot of these things that I see that right away you're lacking. And he took an interest in me. And pretty much right after that, he started kind of trusting me with information in terms of like theater and what being a thespian really meant, both on and off the stage, and like I said, fundamentals and things that you needed to be able to create a character that were much like therapy, things that I've still learned as an adult that you need to be present, be real, be honest with yourself, stuff that goes into great performance now. He was talking to me about when I was 17.
Looking back in hindsight, was it a big switch? Like, do you remember... like how you were off stage to when you got on? Like, could you feel it? So when he called it out, you were like, yeah, I do feel more alive when I get on stage and free.
I'll share something I don't think I've ever said out loud.
No, we're good. Save it for the next one. This has been Dane Cook on the... go for it.
I rolled with it, too.
You did.
I was so ready. I was like going to harmonize with you on that. I thought we were about to break into some kind of, you know, beautiful, joyous melody.
No, please.
I forgot because you interrupted. No, so anyway, next question.
You said he was going to... He told you something that...
No, I'm putting myself back there right now and unexpectedly getting a little bit emotional. I miss Frank. He passed away a couple of years after my parents. But the thing that happened was he said after my first performance in the class... of a small scene, came up, put his hand on my shoulder. He said, I'm very proud of you. You did a great job today. I'd never heard that from anybody. A man. I don't think my dad at that point had even understood what it was to be proud of me and say that.
No way.
I'm getting a little emotional right now. And I went home and I cried. I went home and I cried, not for the first time, not an anxiety or a scared of the world cry, which I had done quite a bit. As a kid dealing with self-esteem issues, I cried because I felt like a little love for myself. And it was, I needed more of that. I got some goosebumps going right here. To be honest, Adam, I think it was the day that probably changed. I think I was on a dark path in my life, and I think I felt like I was being enveloped by some thoughts that were maybe not of a person who wasn't important in the world. And maybe didn't have a place. And that was the first board of a platform, of a foundation that would be the rest of my life, was laying that down. It was really wonderful. It was a gift, man. I love Frank Roberts. He would be upset if I was calling him Frank Roberts. He used to always insist, call me Frank. I'm your friend. I'm not your teacher anymore. But he's my teacher, and he is my friend, and gave a lot to me that day. And then many, many days after that, years after that.
I didn't know. I mean, you've spoken, you know, about how you didn't like school and being an introvert, right?
Yeah.
And how, so I think that's really huge for you to say and for people to recognize how important it is to have somebody like that go out of their way to recognize something in somebody that, you know, maybe you did have like moments of feeling like that might be something that you could do, but like, until somebody like that that really looks you in the eyes and makes it a known thing and is, I mean, like you said, like I didn't know, you know, that you hadn't even heard that from your pops, really.
Yeah. I didn't hear that from my dad until I was maybe around 26 or 27, that we could have a conversation that he really understood that I was finding success in life. And that was wonderful. That was an amazing day as well. But prior to that, I didn't have a man who could be sensitive and treat me with that kind of professional respect. You know, treated me like a performer who is learning the ropes. Treated me like when you see those boxing movies of like it's the kid's first day in the gym and the corner man goes like, "I'm gonna teach you how to take hits today," and you're like, "Oh, okay," like that's what he was to me. You know, in my formative years. So it was great
to trusted him to like do like once someone I think recognizes something special in you that you know, then innately start to discover, oh yeah, I do dig this. And like you said, like love cried because you was it finding some self love?
Yes. I didn't feel I was of no value. I didn't feel like I had value. Now, granted, I had a mom that loved me deeply, and she every day was instilling love and belief and championing me, but I didn't still have it for myself. I almost couldn't understand the language she was speaking of. Why do you love me so much? The rest of the world that maybe you're not seeing is not very fair to me and not very caring or in any way kind of inclusive the way I saw with other kids in groups. And so this was a moment where I finally felt value. And now what I've learned, I'm 47. It took many, many years to finally realize some of the greatest people I know have had to start from, you know, $0 and zero value, because when you really earn those things over the years through self-exploration, then I think that's what actually is the secret sauce of making you relatable and something that people look up to. It gives you the sparkle that you need, because ultimately we all want to feel valued.
Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Koi CBD. Ooh, CBD oil, baby. Feeling relaxed just hearing me talk about it, aren't you? If you don't know what CBD oil is, don't feel like a dum-dum. Adam's here to tell you. CBD is an oil derived from industrial hemp and has no psychoactive effects, man. So you can get the medical benefits, okay, from the hemp plant without getting high. There's no weed. You're not going to get paranoid. It's a great natural alternative to over-the-counter and pharmaceutical drugs. People use CBD oil for pain, depression, anxiety, stress, inflammation. New benefits are being discovered for CBD oil all the time. My mom uses the topical cream from Koi CBD, and it's helped immensely, which is big time because she's been having a tough time with arthritis and finding a solution. And Koi CBD is stepping up to the plate with their topical creams. They've got tincture droplets, vape pens, edibles, pet products for your dogs and cats to chill out. Come on, it's a stressful life being a cat and a dog. You want to chill out? Get some Koi CBD treats. They got topical products and more. All their products are manufactured in the USA with 100% natural CBD oil. It's a family-owned and operated company, and it truly is the best-tasting CBD products on the market. I feel like left and right, people are approaching me after shows, just being in the comedy business, because comedy and CBD kind of go hand in hand. It's great stress reliever for our world. The Koi CBD gummies
I fuck with daily because it puts me in a zen state before I start my day, and at night kind of relaxes me and helps me sleep better, quite honestly, is America's number one trusted CBD brand. All the Quay CBD products are THC free, and there's a guaranteed purity, safety, and consistency level in all of their products. They're the best tasting CBD products on the market. Again, I've tried so many. The amount of people that have, you know, been like, try these pens, we got these flavors and these, you know, you can put strawberry root beer foot. It's like, shut up, man. No, I'm going with Quay CBD because they got the most shit and the best tasting shit. And quite honestly, it's made me feel the best out of any of the products I've tried. And that's why they're America's number one trusted CBD brand. So if you want to get your stress relief on, your relaxation going, and start living a better, healthier life, get rid of that depression, anxiety, stress, and just start feeling better, then get hooked up with Quay CBD, okay? Head on over right now to KoiCBD.com, that's KoiCBD.com, and enter promo code AboutLastNight for 20% off any retail order from the website. That's Koi, KoiCBD.com, promo code AboutLastNight for 20% off any retail order from the website. Gummies, tinctures, pens, creams, they got it all. I'm telling you, they're the shit. And Brad and I couldn't love them more. Who knows? They might fucking make Brad grow, which would ruin his act, but would help them reach the Cocoa Puffs on the top shelf.
And when you earn that value, you kind of, it emulates you. So I'm glad now. I wouldn't change a damn thing.
It's crazy, too, that like, and you know, it makes my chest tight to think about like you having that much like, just, you know, doubt in the world and yourself, and also a consistent thing for a lot of kids. Yeah. Whether it's elementary school, I mean, you know, when I was, you know, in my biggest fat stages, I mean, you know, truly, you know, a feeling being lost and alone, I didn't even know it was possible. And even looking back, and, you know, you get it as a career, the ups and downs, you get, like, moments of that, but you're an adult, you're a little more thick-skinned to handle it. But, like, looking back, I was like, I can't even believe that I felt those things at that age. And even in high school, when you're still kind of young and throwing caution to the wind and whatever, to know that those types of emotions are like possible.
Right.
Were you comparing yourself to other, and let me know if I'm harping on this too much or talking about it, but I think it's, but like when you're feeling like this and you know, were you just comparing to other groups, which I think is what you do in high school, or seeing, is it not feeling accepted in a certain spot that created that, or, because you had buds, right?
Well, I did. I had a couple of, like, singular friends. You know what I mean? I had, like, another kid who maybe also kind of felt like the outcast.
Right.
So there was a couple of people that, until I got into high school, and then I really became close with Al Dalbeny.
Yeah.
Was, like, my first friend, and I went on to have, you know, an amazing early, especially early career with him. And then throughout, you know, just kind of, he's been a constant throughout my life. But, a first real friend maybe when I finally was in around 10th grade to understand what it was to have, you know, loyalty and friendship.
Yeah.
And it was brick by brick, man. You know, it took a while for me after high school to finally really trust people and feel like I had my place in this world, you know, if that makes any sense.
It does. It's insane, too, to know that you felt that way and then to break out of it and then to like take your gift and then you like to have that feeling. It's a complete polar opposites to feel that way, and now you're making people feel like so good, like
right.
Millions, like that's truly
the best, the greatest, you know, because it was like you get to make people laugh. That was always an escape for my family during hardship, so that comes back to like home stuff, and then it's like I get to feel, you know, my self-worth, because I've worked really, that's the thing is people don't realize, like, we work really hard to get that act to a place where it looks like it's effortless.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of pride that comes with that, you know? And, you know, every couple of years you start over with a whole new chunk of material and we have to go through that same, you know, that same process.
Does it get easier? Because you obviously, this will be now, when you lay another one down, be special number six.
I don't know.
Six, five.
A bunch.
Yeah. Does your... I'm actually fascinated by this.
It doesn't get easier because you're... If you're doing it right, you're like putting something else in front of yourself that's going to be like, ah, okay, how do I translate that? Whether it's a feeling or whether it's or even just like being 47 and knowing like, hey, I'm growing older. I talk about it in my act, like, yeah, I'm changing. You know, being self-effacing, self-deprecating, taking the piss out of yourself. I couldn't do that when I was 28 and
pissing yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, literally pissing myself now. Like, that'll probably be in 30 more years. I'll be like wearing diapers and I'll make it funny, man.
Yeah.
But I think it's just owning the whole journey and being able to observe and report. I've been saying that a lot lately, but that's our goal, right? As comics, as we change, not trying to hold on to something we were, celebrate it, but talk about where you're at now.
Do you feel like your comfort level on stage has, coming up on 30 years, I don't want to sleep on that fact, is, I tell this to people all the time when they're like, dude, what's it like? Like, how's Dane? Like, I can't wait to see the show. I'm like, dude, it's crazy to me to be 30 years in at this, to do everything you've done, and to still be performing at this level. I truly don't. It's overwhelming, kind of, to think about. And well, it's so second nature to you, and you're just like, yeah, what's the alternative?
But here's why it's not overwhelming to me. When I came up in Boston, a lot of the guys that were ahead of me that were crushing, like still to this day, some of the best of the best performance-wise, they're all older guys. Some of them look like they were fucking 70 already when I started, but they were just like imbibing in a lot of, you know, offstage activities, yeah, that maybe weren't like the healthiest.
Yeah.
Those guys wouldn't have been podcasting back in, you know, 87.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for me, I always came up looking at guys like, I'm trying to think, like, you know, whether I was watching guys like Newhart or whether I was watching, you know, seeing like a Joan Rivers or Milton Berle's.
Did you watch much
Jerry
Carson?
Lewis. I was always watching all kinds of comics, not just contemporaries, and realizing, oh, this thing goes till you're fucking 90. This isn't just about the special that you do now and making that, like, live on forever. How can I, you know, rinse and repeat? What you really notice, and Carlin probably more than anybody, I watched this guy age as I was getting older. He seemed to age. For me, it was like, okay, when I'm in ninth grade watching Carlin to when I graduated, it was like, did he go from 55 to like 78?
Yeah, yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
But I loved him, and I loved that I was watching him go through, you know, cantankerous, and then being, you know, even sillier, sometimes being even more vulgar and dirty, yeah, and outside the box, even sillier, and then being older and being a bit more cynical, sometimes just being like, you know, off the beaten trail of traditional comedy for what I thought Carlin was, doing things that were just like rhyming words and just stuff that was maybe just interesting to him, that right, he was watching that over maybe a 20-year period. It was already teaching me the lessons, the master class of don't walk into anything with this. Always keep it exciting. Always be learning. Always be showing the best of what you are coupled with something that you just discovered. A new trick with an old trick. If you could be doing that during an hour and a half performance, what they're getting from you, what the tingle they're getting is seeing somebody so fucking seasoned, but somebody brand new.
Whoa.
Dude, if you can get to that place, that's where I'm at, man. I'm not going to bullshit. I own a lot about myself, and I think in these podcasts, I've probably danced around it sometimes, because if you don't ask me a direct question, I'm not going to always give you, like, the full answer.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I'm at the best place in my game ever. I know where I stand outside of what any list tells me. I don't need a list. I don't need an award.
Oh, yeah.
I basically haven't gotten those things. And I like that, because I like not being expected of, like, even in the credits, you always give me such a great intro. Your intro is, first of all, you kill. Let me just fucking, like, say it like it is right here.
Thanks.
You've been having amazing sets. I've worked with you now for a number of years in, like, high-pressure situations. You deliver.
Thanks, man.
You deliver. You leave them in a place that's like, okay, nobody's just going to walk out there and think they can saunter into their performance. I got to go. Some Rolling Stone shit, right? They only put the best before them before they perform, so they have to come out and, like,
right,
start it in gear four. But you always give me an intro that's like, you know, you come up and you go through the the list of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's
which
always,
I was telling you the other night, I go, is you know, you've earned that. And it's also a quick retrospective for the audience, a majority that are there for that. And even the
you know what it tells me, though? Everybody's hearing that, but I'm hearing one thing different from everybody else. What haven't I done? That's what I'm... Wow. I'm hearing those ingredients, and I'm going... I'm hearing it, and I'm ready to walk out on stage. But I'm pretty lucid now. I'm not, like, ahead of myself or behind myself.
Yeah.
I'm in the moment. And in that moment, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, what haven't you showed him? What are you not completing that you're going to try tonight?
Wow.
And on any given night, even though, yeah, some of it is set material, and we know we got to get from A to B to C.
Yeah.
And that's to be expected. People are paying a hard-earned dollar. You're going to give them the show?
It's always different, though.
I got to find something. I got to find something in there that isn't in Vicious Circle or Retaliation or Isolated Incident. You're saying those words, and I'm going, what the fuck else? What am I going to give them tonight that's not of any of those things?
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, what else? Like, hey, man, you missed a movie.
That being said, you actually you are skipping a couple of high-water mark accomplishments.
Yeah. Is there something – do you ever – when I see you, like, and you're great about it, sharing people that are, like, you know, rewatching Vicious Circle, rewatching Isolated Incident. There's a two-part question, and I'll ask the first part first.
I'll make it a four-part answer. Watch this. Look at me making it difficult.
Is there something – that you, when you rewatch, because I'm sure when they tag you in, like, rewatching a moment from Vicious Circle or Rough Around the Edges, that you watch that and you get taken back to that time, right?
It's yeah.
impossible not to. I want to know, what are the things for each of those specials that pops up your first, like, memory of it, whether yeah. it's the whole overall making of, like, you know, I know that you said, I think it was Isolated Incident was all improvised.
No, a lot of Rough Around the Edges.
That's right.
Yeah, it was like a 50-50 split.
So for each one, what comes up?
Yeah, I mean, when people post those,
yeah.
I will tell you that I'm never embarrassed outside of, like, making fun of, like, a hairstyle that yeah. might be a little bit of, you know, off kilter or clothing that, you know, times change. I've never looked at any performance that I've put out there in the world without I see it like this, man. I just want to be really, just so people aren't going like, oh, he loves everything. No, it's not like that. I see the things I'm lacking, even when I look back. But I'm proud that the things that I was good at those periods, I fucking hit.
Yeah.
So when I'm I guess you could say, like, you know, like when you watch a retrospective of, you know, you might be watching something about, like, you know, auto racers, and they go like, we built 5 cars that came in last place.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we finally, you know, took that engine apart, and then we realized, you know what? We had all the pieces, but we needed this cylinder, or we needed... I look back now and I go, oh, I can see, like, how I was getting better. And I could see the places that, like, I was just on the, you know, on the edge of my seat and kind of winging it. And I can see the things, the happy accidents that worked in my favor. So, yeah, when people are posting those clips... You're
thinking of both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. I can enjoy. I don't cringe outside of, like, the occasional, like, oh my god, look at that fucking leather jacket that's, like, so heavy. I'm probably sweating a premium blend or something.
Yeah.
But I can still look at it and go, for 1998, I was pretty good, and I was where I should have been in 98.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's also such a, you know, insane idea to look back at something 10 years ago, and go, God, I can't believe I did that joke. Because
just,
it's like,
just understand it from this, as a friend, and as, you know, holding a mic in my hand to try to, you know, meet in the middle of, like, just if we were rapping off pod, dude, all my worst feelings about myself were when I was young, all my worst inner failures, all my most defeatist attitude was all those, you know, years as a kid. Anything I did once I step on a stage, when you ask me, what do you think when you feel that? I'm like, I'm not dead. I'm a kid who's alive and doing it. I had a purpose and a belief. And even though it was only 10 years in or 15 years in or 22 years in, it's all like, dude, I did it.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing it at a high caliber. And I'm getting to introduce myself to brand new fans and making the old ones go, didn't know I could like it any more than I did.
That's crazy.
So I think you're only going to look back at something that you did in 2002 and maybe feel unsure about it if you're unsure about where you're at now.
I want to know, coming up on 30 years, take me, first of all, is it more fun? Is that like a stupid question?
Is it more fun today?
More fun.
Yeah, because it's more fun triangulating my professional life, my personal life, and my business offstage life. All of those things are at like a more relaxed and more present place.
And also, I think it does help to be, and we talked about this too off mic a little bit about, you know, both of our acts kind of being this like it's, we're not trying to change the world, get too political, hit topics that are, you know, that some comics do brilliantly and go after, right, and really kind of can
make polarizing.
Polarizing, be divisive. You and I both are like, we're going to have as much fun on stage, have you enjoy it,
right,
be upbeat, silly. You right. know, yeah, have some things that make you think. Like, even all your stuff with, which, you know, I think you are truly the best at depicting a relationship, like, moment between, whether it's the fights you saw at the grocery store, you know, and the ones that you're doing now, which right. I can't wait for people to see. Like, that stuff is so raw and real and silly with some of the act outs, but still so poignant. Right. And for what is, like, the breakdown and the differences between a guy and a girl in a relationship. So it's not like, again, a polarizing topic, but it's still something that's very yeah. relatable.
Some people will come to me sometimes and go, why do you do relationships? Why does Gaffigan still do food stuff when it was, why does Whitney Cummings do? And you go, because always. There's always a new couple
yeah.
that are experiencing it for the first time.
Yeah. And you're talking about it from a place, like your stories that you're talking about now, like you didn't do this bit 8 years ago,
yeah.
8 years of time to see it all right. differently, right?
Right. As, yeah, I would assume that as time goes on, and like even in my own personal life and relationships, achieving other perspectives will influence even how those stories come down the line in years to come. But I just know this. There's a couple at the show every night that's either on their first date or celebrating a
oh, yeah.
second year or third year. You'll never go wrong by tapping into human condition stuff.
Oh,
and nothing better than love and you know, sometimes going head to head. That's fodder right there.
When I sit in the back and watch the shows, it's some of the times I see people laugh the hardest because it's the couples together. It's so, for lack of a better word, special to see you talking about something that's so real and seeing them not looking at each other with some sort of like, you know, passive, like, oh yeah, you do yeah. that. You make it weird.
Well, it might be good. Sometimes they're doing that, and then it's opening a conversation that then offers them
yeah.
perspective.
Yeah,
you know. So sometimes you're giving people a little push. And of course, when I did Troublemaker, I was like actually trying to pull people apart in the sense of not make people break up for the sake of breaking up. It was like, let me put out some harsh truths so that certain people would be like, yeah, you know what? Let's not waste time here. We are not right for each other.
yeah.
So, you know, that's always going to be, for me, food for thought. Who am I in a relationship, and how do I see the world in relationships? And also, to kind of put a you know, finality on that part of the conversation, it's like, I think that political comedy, very important, always very critical to have some people who can vamp on really what's the state of, you know, the world that we live in.
Yeah.
But I want to see people who are at the highest caliber and the best at that doing that. That's not my forte. I would never put that on and go, just because I can be on stage, I'm the guy that should be pontificating about that. I love watching comics like that. Some of my favorite shows, like watching A Real Time or John Oliver yeah. or, you know, Colbert.
Yeah.
Man, the people that are great at political humor, you know, should be doing it. But for me, that's not my lane.
Do you feel like you put on a new set of comedy goggles, it's safe to say, every 10 years? Like, on just how you see?
I wouldn't say I put a time limit on it. I think that I'm just, there's always going to be a part of me that's astonished by the way the world acts and reacts. And that might be still kind of like just the boyishness and the wonderment in me. And I hope that never goes away. Because that's what makes me want to observe and report and get up there and keep playing around with it, you know?
Were you always able, because in your depiction of relationships, that was the one thing when I first heard Harmful and Swallowed, and then Retaliation, where I think, is that where the grocery store fight is on Retaliation with the jelly?
So. Yes, get the jelly twat.
To me, I was like, I mean, to a T, A, the whole picture was painted, which I was, you know, that was one of the early things I grasped, when I'm sure many people did grasp onto, was like, wow, I'm listening to this and I see everything.
Sure.
Which I know you pride yourself in, you know, painting the picture and letting people show. Because guess what? The more you can see it, the more you can understand it, the more you can get on
board. Richard Pryor, you know, more than anybody. Like, I felt like I could close my eyes and see everything that that guy was putting in front of us.
Were you always able to have a strong sense of wherewithal and just be that observant, like to truly hear or see and then go, oh, I know how to give this to everybody?
I was always pretty good at absorbing behaviors. And even though I was pretty good at impersonating people, I was really good at finding your little tics and physicalities and tones, as opposed to just straight up, like, you know, impersonations or impressions. So, yeah, I feel like I was always pretty good at I would watch. Sometimes my mom and dad would get in these weird fights. And then when everything was settled down, I could act out how they both behaved. Behavioral stuff. I was always really interested in that. And then they would laugh at themselves. So the fact that they could laugh at themselves through behavior that wasn't maybe necessarily like grown up at the time was information that I needed later for comedy. People like to laugh at themselves. We like to go, oh, my God, I did do that, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did do that. I did say that. People like when it's about them. So when you can put more of that and inject that into your comedy, and I said that a lot in Troublemaker. Yeah, you're laughing because this is you. Yeah. I think I said that. Yeah. I was almost going to call that special something like,
this is you.
This is us, or this is you, or because I was, you know, blatantly saying it like, you're doing this. I'm just showing you what you do openly.
I think comics are some of the best people at laughing at themselves, and there's no better example than your recent appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, in which...
Starring Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Not with.
In which you...
Starring.
That was probably a conscious move.
Why not?
Right?
Of course.
Yeah.
That would have been my first move, too. I would have been like, oh, all right, I'm here.
Yeah, this is like, no, that sounds like you just...
It's not like I'm with the show.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, he's at the helm of that show.
You came... You were telling me when we were backstage at The Tonight Show, which was awesome. You crushed. What was extra cool about it...
Yeah, I don't know how you got in, but anyway. Adam just floats backstage.
I said I knew
Dave.
Hey,
man.
I said I know Dave. They go, Dane? I go, yeah. Is that who's on?
No. Of course, I was psyched that you were there, and we talked about you coming back to New York with me.
I've only done couch and stand-up
once. By the way, were you doing that thing where you were like, if Dane falls and breaks his leg 5 minutes before, I'm going to be ready.
I'm waiting.
They might go, if only we had a comic. We need someone to fill the space. Did you do that?
Can I be honest? I didn't know if there was going to be a musical guest or comedian. I didn't know the panel layout.
Okay.
So a small piece of me did think.
That's right.
Not filling for
I
you,
knew
but
it.
But if
maybe.
They have somebody slated at the end and the musician and the band is late, or the comic something happens and they have to cut, that
let me tell you something.
Yeah, that I go. No. I started thinking about my five, and I
knew it. We've never talked about it, and I knew it. I knew it.
But not to take your shit.
No. But maybe. No, you're ready for anything.
Is that fucked up?
Dude, no. I walked into that building going, if Jimmy fucking fainted 3 minutes before, I would be ready. I was already thinking.
To jump behind the desk.
I would already go.
And pull me out.
Hey, listen, if Questlove can't do it, like, or, you know, Steve Higgins can't, like, tell me. I'm good. I still think that.
Wow, dude.
Any situation... Any charity event, anything that I've ever walked into, I'd be lying if I didn't say there wasn't a moment where I thought, if they need me, am I ready? And I should be ready for anything. And even doing that, if they say, Jimmy just threw up and something he's stuck in traffic. He can't be here. Can you do the show? It always goes through my mind. And I always prepare myself to be ready for that.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never not done that. And I knew that you did that. I knew that you had 5 minutes already just in case.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Dane got food poisoning. We need somebody to go out there.
fuck, dude.
You never know, man. You never know. It's a fun. It's a funny, weird. You know, it's a wild business,
and it's truly a business of uncertainty and flimsiness, yeah. To where it's not impossible too.
And right place, right time. It's not impossible, and it has happened to where somebody has had to fill in for somebody last minute, and they go, hey, we ran upstairs and got somebody from SNL to come down. Now, realistically, yeah. They'd probably go up and get, you know, Colin Jost or somebody like that.
Yeah, but maybe somebody's locked the door and Jost can't get out.
You never know. And you know what? I think the same thing. I'm like, if they need me, I hope I can come through. I'm ready.
Do you think about that in line at Chipotle? You're like, if this guy faints making my burrito, can I hop over and finish it?
Not only do I think about it, I've got a name tag already in my pocket.
With a nickname?
With a nickname.
Like, Dane, like come aboard Dane the Burrito Train?
Yeah. Hello, my name is Salmonella.
That's a little joke. You guys want chicken or beef? That was really awesome for many reasons.
Thank
you. It's the fucking Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But again, the first guest, what was her name again, from 12 Years a Slave and
Lupita Nyong'o.
Oscar winner. Amazing. But there was a shift in energy when someone comes out with, A, your energy, B, it was, and I saw Jimmy's guard drop immediately. You guys have a little bit of a history. You said you guys were both kind of coming up more or less at the same time. Didn't really ever be on the same show or
We were. Yeah, we were definitely on lineups.
Right.
But in terms of just like being booked on like co-headlining things or feature and headline, that we never really were paired up.
Right.
You know, probably because we were very similar as well at that time.
And you said colleges too, like you guys.
Yeah.
Because people forget that you crushed so hard on the college circuit that kind of bypassed doing clubs and went right to theaters, arenas, right? That's kind of more or less how it worked.
It was a bit of a conscious effort on my part, coupled with having some major anxiety to go, I don't want to go anywhere where I don't feel completely welcome to come in and perform. And so a little bit of both. I like being in New England, staying close to home, and I could do those colleges, and I was getting better. And in my mind, I'm like, why at this point go to Wisconsin? No one knows me. I'm terrified. There'll probably be nobody there. That's not going to bode very well for me in terms of like when club owners talk. I'm just going to wait and build where I am until I'm undeniable where I am. And that's really the key. Always make your cup floweth over where you are until whatever comes out of it seeps somewhere else. And people are going, please come here. Please. Please.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah.
You just made me think about canceling my entire 2020 calendar.
Again, would I have done that if I was a super confident 22-year-old? I might have been in Wisconsin. But I was anxious, and I wasn't as good as maybe what I was hoping I would be at that point. So there's Jimmy and I, New England kids, just passing each other in the night, going gig to gig. I'd always see his headshots up at places.
Yeah.
And he was either coming in the week before or the week after me. It was crazy for a lot of years.
Do you think there's something with comics? And I think you guys, again, there was a shift in the energy. His guard dropped. He felt like...
And mine too, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah, like I didn't have a guard, but my... The feeling of being, wanted. And when we do stand-up, we provide that feeling. We're alone.
Yeah.
When you're on a talk show, I'm not going to say names, but I've looked into people's eyes where you're like, there's a lot of things on this person's mind. My guest appearance may not be the most important thing to them. You kind of feel it. You're just a part of the show.
Right.
As opposed to Jimmy made me feel immediately like, we're just going to rap here, man. This is going to be like sitting at a table at the Comedy Cellar or something.
Not every comic can do that.
No.
You know, there is I think it's another acquired skill set along with everything else that we do to be that, don't you think? Like to be that comfortable with just even a one-on-one or a three people at a table and share the wealth, chime in, listen, don't want to be the only one talking.
Right.
But you and Jimmy had, man, a back and forth that, I mean, it was, I think, slated for 6 minutes. It felt like 15 because, and I told you this right when you got off, I was like, dude, you packed in so many jokes, so many moments. You completely improvised your opening which was a callback to something that had happened moments prior.
Right.
And again, the timing of it was so – it was a game that, that Lupita and Jimmy had played, and you kind of referenced that. And then you did this whole physical act out, which apparently you thought of the morning of.
That's right.
Which, to me, I would be – and again, you know, you're in a place to where – way more established than me to maybe feel like that should give you the chutzpah to roll the dice and do that. But also – he said, I don't think he hadn't been on the show for a few years.
5 years.
So maybe there should be some trepidation to go, well, I don't want to completely ruffle feathers. But you did anyway. You trust your instincts. It crushed. Jimmy commented on to you about it later through DMs, you said.
Yeah.
Like, where do you – was there – does that part of the repertoire get stronger? Or do you have to, like, you know, practice it for it to get that way?
Yeah, I think at a certain – at a certain part of our careers, what you're looking for and what you're hoping is there's no frills and I'm going to be received and accepted for what I am. And I think when we watch guys like Will Ferrell or Ricky Gervais, I think there's an understanding of what they bring to the table. And part of what they do is say what they want when they want, and they're not afraid really of how that lands. Not everything has to always be so polished, because personality goes a lot further than the perfect joke. The perfect joke coupled with personality is the secret.
Yeah.
Now, you don't even have to have the perfect joke. You can have a decent joke, but if you've got great personality and a great rapport, that that upticks it. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts with when you go onto a show like that. Do you go, I'm going to take the lean back approach and I'm just going to stick to my formula? Or you go, am I going to be fancy free and am I going to just let more personality come? And then if we get to the bits, we get to the bit. And I like to be in a place where I could either lean in, lean back. And how do you know which one to do? You know, in the instant that you sit down on that couch with the person and you look into their eyes and you go, okay, Jimmy's present and he's game. And then you go with it. You know, it takes, and that's just seasoning, man. That's after years and years and years.
You've done a lot of, even though you hadn't done a couch for 5 years, you still, I mean, as soon as you were there and the whole.
Well, I'd done couch Kimmel.
Right, right, right.
I did Kimmel last year.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, there was other places that I still felt like I was a little more well-oiled. But, no, I wanted to be able to go out and hang with Jimmy. And I wanted to be able to, for, you know, for him, you always want to deliver. You know, it's his show. He wants to, you know, be able to go home every night and go, everybody that I had on came with their prepared and made me look good. And by the way, you know, that's not an easy job, to be able to sit back sometimes when you're with fellow comics and go, I'm going to serve some things up to you.
Totally, dude.
So, and he, you know, to be able to do that for me, dude, it was just respect. It was like a respect fest. Even looking over Questlove, I've known him for a lot of years, and even we're not close, you know, close buddies, but the respect of knowing people for that period of time and to look over and give it up to the Roots. And, like, all that stuff is in the air while you're performing, a respect and a setting each other up for success. I like to participate in that.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome to see a guy that is so, I guess you could say, polished, just with his monologue and everything that kind of seems monotonous with doing the show, see him be a completely different host in that moment. Because again, like, there's not comics on doing the couch a lot, and that is what he started in. And I feel like what he truly, the same way when, you know, Sandler going back and Judd getting back, like, I mean, I think Sandler more than Judd truly was doing it for a while, right, before he popped. But you could tell that that's in Jimmy, which was really cool for me to see. Like, oh, he's vibing out and geeking out on this conversation more than he normally does, because again, there's like this brotherhood, sisterhood, humanhood of the comedy grind, that it was just like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, you felt it.
That's why the pictures were well received, because there was both of us showing, like, we're not kidding, we were kids when we started this thing out together.
Yeah,
you know,
that was very real for the audience too to see.
Yeah.
By the way, we should. Had you looked back at that headshot since then? It's not like you have it hanging in your office, right?
I hadn't seen that particular headshot in 10 years. I actually forgot about it until I saw it.
You had a vest, I think, with like big pot, like a real loose, like Massimo vest with a tank top.
Yep.
And a
mullet.
What came first, the tank top or the mullet? I mean, for real. Did you go, what looks good with his hair?
The tank top, because I actually have pictures of me when I was like 3 or 4 years old where I'm rocking the tank top. I wore it my whole life. The fact that I wore that on my first special, the Comedy Central special, was really kind of interesting because it's like that was me since I was a baby. That was really more me than
and that was a
last
bowling
minute, shirt.
Call, right?
Yeah. That was literally an hour before.
And that was your mom's call, right?
Yeah, because I didn't want to wear like what Comedy Central told me I should wear,
which wasn't me. I can't believe that part of it even exists, where they are like, hey, cool, we hired you to do what you do, but we want to change what you are right before you do what you do, which is what we got you for.
Right. Well, what the other part of this conversation, maybe for part two, is, you know, behind the scenes, there's a lot of people that are in creative that are not creative, and that's another part of the business you gotta, you know, understand and figure out how to traverse. It's frustrating because there's a lot of people with very little ability to be creative making the creative decisions. They just go by the formula or whatever their cheat sheet is or whatever's popular, who's got the buzz. Very, very dangerous time to be a comic with buzz. Very, very scary time to be a comic with an overnight sensation, because overnight sensation used to lead to, hey, maybe I can parlay this into a few years and get a few holding deals. Uh-uh. Antics and behavior are going to take you to a few clicks, and then it's going to those clicks are going to stop as quickly as they started.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of people over the next few years that are like in for a very, very rude awakening when they see that they're not going to get that same kind of knee-jerk reaction. Or what can we say now instead of knee-jerk? Digit keyboard reaction. It's going to be wild. People are on to the next thing.
Is there anything that scares you now about stand-up? Or do you feel completely fearless? Do you allow for any sort of nerves? People ask me all the time, do you still get nervous? And I'm only 13 years in, but they go, do you still get nervous? And I go, I always allow for a little bit of something to seep in. Not where I go, oh, I might bomb. But and that comes in knowing that I'm going to allow myself to be present and allow to stray off script. So I know that I'm going to do that. So that creeps in, because then I go, oh, so I don't know how every moment I have a map.
And can I just say, so people really understand what this means when you and I are saying that? Because where we're very similar is, we can be like tangent comics where we have a rigmarole that we want to blast through.
Yeah.
But we're also very open to like an audience break, to where new information can come in that then leads us into that piece of material.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'm sounding too heady, but basically it's like we're improvisational comedians that are also very well polished and want to hit you with our best shit when it's appropriate. We want to be in that middle spot. So that's basically what you're saying. It's like people will go, but I saw you do that bit and you rat-tat-tatted it. And then you go, yeah, but right after at the very end, I look down and go, you're laughing at that. Has that happened to you? And then we're going to take you on a 3-minute journey with something we've never heard before.
Yeah.
That's where we want to live. So, yeah, that'll always be there, a little bit of wonder and not fear so much as like the what if. I like being on the cusp of the what if before I go on stage. I got my bag of tricks. I got my bits that I love right now because I've worked on them for a while and I'm ready to like share them with a new gang of people.
Yeah.
But I want to find something tonight too with everybody else. And I think that's why I like having you on these shows. And as you go on in your career and you find your success in more headlining, and then you'll be probably taking a guy out like you that's got that similar kind of mentality of like, hey, let's do something that's happening, that's prepared, but it's also happening right now. Great space for us to be in.
Yeah.
We're going to kill it this weekend.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
9 inches.
Good night, everybody.
Yay.
I do want to say, being on this tour has been, a whirlwind of just trying to
get paid.
And when's that Venmo coming? I'm going to start wearing a shirt on stage that says that. So when I introduce you in turn and you point at me, I can just go point at my chest and go, you go, God damn it, dude. Getting to kick it is getting to hang out with comedians is a very unique, I don't know if privilege is the right word, but it's why, you know, athletes want to hang out with comics. It's why a lot of my friends that work 9-to-5s always want to, are we going out after the show? Are
sure.
We, you know what I'm saying? And getting to kick it with you has been almost cooler than the shows and the private jets, which people should know we are in the back of a Spirit Airlines flight. But look, you can't win them all. It sounds like we're on a private jet. No, we're on a private jet. The private jet life is unreal, and I don't know how long you've been doing it, but it definitely, the accessibility, the stress reliever that it takes sure. out to make the gig the most important thing.
Yeah.
I get it, dude.
Yes.
And I hope I can get to a place to make this a part of the routine because, man, it does. You know, I think you and I both, we're doing our thing regardless. But guess what? If you can find ways to make it even, put the show up on, you know, only a couple steps to get up to right. the stage versus
yeah.
three or four. So again, this is a long way of saying getting to hang out has been like extra cool. Hawaii was extra cool.
Yeah.
And here's when I truly go, again, seeing someone on stage, you get a new found respect to see someone in their element, right?
Absolutely.
But getting to, for me, kicking it with somebody like when we went ziplining in Hawaii and having that hang, not just be like, oh, let's go ziplining and let's climb up to the thing and zip from station to station.
Right.
But to have, I wanted that whole day. I was like, man, we're going with our girls. We're going to be ziplining. It's outdoors. It's fucking Hawaii. And it's in my nature to be with these guides and like, you know, I was in the back of the class making jokes, trying to make my friends laugh, busting the teacher's balls. And right out of the gate, like you were doing that with our two guides.
Yeah.
And then you and I had some back and forth and I was like, oh man, like this truly is what it's all about.
Sure.
And to get that and to see how fun you were in that space, I go, oh, no wonder that you're that fun on stage. Because you can't do one without the other. You got to be, and you know,
you have to have that levity in your life and in your career.
But hanging on the plane, hanging at your place, watching football games at clubs, hey, that's all fun and loose. But like, you know, like to get out and do something that's like out of the comfort zone, but outside the realm of the traditional hang, and still have it be like where you go, oh yeah, at the core of it, I just want to have fun and make my friends laugh.
Of
you
course.
Know?
Yeah. That's really it.
That was eye-opening. It was
that's
like,
it.
Yeah.
Like to bullshit and be able to just like be funny off the cuff and enjoy life and be in a situation where, yeah, it's nice to be on a private plane. It makes me sometimes as I'm sitting here remember like being at the back of a lot of Greyhound buses, you know, jammed in that middle seat. And going, I just want to work hard enough that I can provide an opportunity to make great memories. And that's what we're doing.
Fuck. Well, thank you. This was awesome.
Absolutely,
first,
man.
First private jet podcast. Katie Couric might have done one.
Can we tell people that we're actually also flying the plane? We killed the pilots. They're dead. I played Microsoft Simulation a couple of times back in 98. Yeah, I think I know how to bring this fucking bird in.
Can I be honest? That's all you need.
That's it.
I played Duck Hunt. You don't think I can steer a tool?
Yeah. Let's land this fucker
it's
and do a show.
It's just a joystick.
Is that a lake? Let's land there and duck hunt.
Good night, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Have a good one.
Fucking dude. listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Meh, what's up, dog? This is your pal Bugs Bunny. Say, I got a question for you. Do you know who has the head of Elmer Fudd and the body of Foghorn Leghorn? Why, that's Adam Ray and Brad Williams. Ain't I a stinker?
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.